request from a mayor is just nonsense. Could my stars have simply aligned in such a lucky way? Excellent! Then until we meet again, when you find out the identity of the squad coordinator, just say, I call upon a herald. I require your assistance. One of them would turn up right away. Now, if you please excuse me, I have business to attend to. The guard will show you out. I left the administration building feeling dazed. That was some stroke of luck. To get a quest that gives bonuses, even if you fail it, is a dream for any would-be slacker. Right. I need to calm down or get all these emotions under control. What do I have to do in Farstead? Why did I come here in the first place? I have to find out if there is a shaman trainer here. I need to drop by a cartographer and buy maps of Malabar and the town. I also need to find profession trainers, buy a scroll of teleportation to Beatwick and to the town. Should I buy a portal scroll to Anhurst too, perhaps? If it's less than 2,000 gold, I'll get it for sure. But first, to the bank.
How can I be of service?
The drawling and somewhat squeaky voice belonged to a small gremlin, dressed in a checkered suit and sporting two enormous goblin-like ears. I would like to access my account and withdraw items belonging to Mahen the Hunter.
Identification was successful. The items of Mahen the Hunter are in your personal room, and you may withdraw them, the gremlin said a few seconds later. Regarding accessing your account, we would like to offer you a new system for the storage of cash funds. Now, as soon as you get the money, it could go to your account immediately, bypassing the need to visit the bank. Any needed amount, limited only by the size of your deposit, would always be in your purse. The cost of the service is 2,000 gold a year, and also 5% of the total of any transactions with the account. Would you like to sign up for the new offer?
Wow! A new banking feature in Barleona. The idea of introducing such a deposit was quite ingenious, since now PK players would only be able to get their hands on legendary items, with money remaining out of their reach. But 2 grand a year and 5% from each transaction, on top of the minus 30% from the red headband, this is just way too much money for me. But then again, it would mean greater security. All right, sign me up. Ignoring my inner greed toad, which was protesting vigorously and stomping around my head with a sign, "We want our money back," I decided to set up the new account. Keeping my money safe was a number one priority, as I had little desire to inadvertently enrich random robbers.
It's done.
The gremlin handed me a new purse, which immediately found its place on my belt.
Your current funds on account amount to 16,045 gold, 32 silver, and 45 copper coins. You have been given the purse for this account. There are also two invitations in your name. Here they are.
The gremlin gave me two golden coupons, my 400,000 of potential gold pieces. All that remained was to find a buyer, and it's in the bag.
Is there anything else you want?
Seeing me shake my head, the gremlin went on.
Thank you for using the Bank of Barleona. Your personal room awaits you.
He pointed towards an open door. A personal room in the bank. It's a bit of a joke, really. There's a table, a chair, not even a chair, a stool, and an empty cupboard for items, and all of this was contained in 3 square meters. There was barely any place to turn. I took out the orc warrior figurines and arranged them on the table. What was so valuable about them? They looked like ordinary green chess pieces, and yet people were prepared to pay crazy money for them, and offer sky-high positions. This was crazy. I took one of the orc figurines and looked at its properties. What did we have?
Gritchen, the Unbreakable. Around 3,000 years ago, the orc tribes...
I already knew this text. The head of the Pryke Mine told me the story when he examined the figurines. The description text could not fit on one virtual page, so I scrolled it down, right to the end.
Ah, what's this?
An ordinary and uncomplicated line of characters. No explanations. Nothing. Just a quadratic equation. But why on earth was it there? I started to go through each figurine in turn.
1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21. 7 digits after the dot equals value entry field.
Entry field. As soon as I pressed it, a virtual keyboard appeared in front of me for typing in the needed value. I entered an empty line. Nothing happened. I put in each sign from the figurine separately. There was no result. I then spent almost an hour on entering different combinations. 0. Judging by the text, you had to work out some value with precision of 7 digits after the dot, but I saw no logic at all in these lines. Having spent all that time on attempts to come up with a value, starting from an empty line and ending with typing in random numbers, I gave up. There was no result. Damn, this is really messing with my head. That's it. I need a break. I would walk around, drop by the merchants, visit the cartographer, and chill out for a bit. Perhaps some clever thought would hit me after that. One thing was clear. I would not be leaving the figurines in the bank. What if I get a sudden insight into how to solve this puzzle, and the figurines are stashed away out of reach? I think not. I put the hunter's items and the chess pieces in my bag and left the bank. What could those signs mean?
Good sirs, is there a shaman trainer and a cartographer in your town?
I asked for directions from the first patrol that I came across, as they were cruising the town streets at a steady pace. Even despite my red band, which would produce a negative reaction with the NPCs, the guards were obliged to answer the questions asked of them.
We do have a cartographer. To get to him, you need to walk to the end of the street until that overturned cart, then turn right, and then keep going straight until a fountain with a unicorn. From the fountain, you turn left, and 3 houses later on the right, you will see a sign with a map. That's where the cartographer lives, said the guard.
His chesty yet quiet voice strongly reminded me of the orc from the mine, which brought to my memory the desire to find out why he was sent to Pryke and stripped of the title of a trainer.
We don't have any shaman trainers, just one former one by the name of Almas. If you want to learn something about shamans, you can go to him. Almas lives right by the town wall. To find him, you need to go straight.
The guard started to give me a rather complicated set of directions to Almas, so I caught only half of what he was saying. First, I needed to buy a map of the town that would show me where I was, and then simply ask a guard to point out the location, mark it, and steadily make my way there.
Any more questions?
No, thank you. You were of great help.
We serve the Emperor,
barked the guards, and unhurriedly continued on their beat.
Dearie, can you help out a weak and helpless woman?
I almost got as far as the cartographer, when an old lady standing in a house entrance called me over. She was leaning on a walking stick and holding a sealed envelope, which she was stretching towards me. A delivery quest? At last I'm becoming an ordinary player, who is being asked to do various assignments. And where you get assignments, you get experience, reputation, and money. Of course I will help the elderly woman. The cartographer and Almas aren't going anywhere. I'm at your service, dear lady. What was it that you wanted?
I wanted to send a letter to my friend Mabel. Both of us have become too old to walk over for a chat, so we've decided to send each other letters. Would you deliver it? It isn't far, just around the corner. It's a house painted with a flower pattern.
She waved her hand, assumingly, toward the said house. Of course I'll do it. Give me the letter and I'll deliver it in no time.
I'll be honest with you, my good lad. I have no money, so I can't pay you anything for your good deed. I can only put in a good word for you later.
Who cares about the money if it's that close? I said cheerfully, though inside I was very disappointed. Just my luck to come across a free quest, of which there are plenty in Barleona. Such quests are aimed at socialization of the players when they have nothing better to do. Just a few grains of experience, no money or reputation. Few people waste their time on them. Fine, if I said I'd do it, backing out of it wouldn't look nice. There wouldn't be any consequences, of course, but I would feel bad about ditching the old lady, even if she was an NPC.
Quest accepted. Deliver a letter. Description. Deliver a letter to Mabel, who lives in a flower-painted house. Quest type, common. Reward, 10 experience. Penalty for not completing the quest, none.
I celebrated starting to get quests too soon. How could I forget about the socializers? And I got all excited about raking in all that cash and experience. Yeah, right, in my dreams. Mabel turned out to be a wrinkled old woman leaning on a stick, just like the one that sent me. It was as if they were sisters. They even resembled each other somewhat. Probably the developers didn't want to spend too much time on their appearance and use the same template, sticking them into different houses and forgetting all about them. This isn't the capital, where each NPC is thought through to the extent of being able to tell the history of their ancestors several generations back, at the drop of a hat. Here, on the periphery, where there aren't that many players, they didn't have to bother all that hard.
Oh, thank you, Sonny. I've given up hope of getting a letter from Patricia. Before, we used to write to each other every day, but these days, few people want to help us out. Everyone wants to see some cash for the help, but help is best given freely, is it not? No one's really mindful of old age.
Quest, deliver a letter completed. Reward, 10 experience. Points remaining until next level, 1,091 experience.
I nodded in a resigned fashion, giving little heed to Mabel's moral instruction. A socializer quest. Not much you can do with it. Aside from getting no money out of it, you're bound to have to listen to moral stories about the injustice of the world. The old woman finally fell silent. I turned around and tried to quietly disappear, but that was all wishful thinking.
"Dearie, can you help out a weak and helpless woman? I jotted down a note for Patricia here, but have no one except you to deliver it. Would you do a kindness for Granny?"
Mabel was ready to hand me a sealed envelope.
When on earth did she have the time?
All she seemed to be doing was stand there, giving me a lecture, but now had an envelope ready all of a sudden.
"I'll be honest with you, my good lad. I have no money, so I can't pay you anything for your good deed. I can only put in a good word for you later."
This one's at it, too. No money, can't pay, but you must do the work well and without a complaint, and we'll just put in a good word for you. Of course, dear lady. I will deliver your letter to Patricia, don't you worry.
Good day to you. Quest accepted. Deliver a letter. Description. Deliver a letter to Patricia, who lives in a brown house. Quest type, common. Reward, 10 experience. Penalty for not completing the quest, none.
Patricia stood in the door of her house, as if awaiting my return.
So, is Mabel still with us?
She's alive and well, and is sending a letter back to you. Here you go, I said, handing the old lady the envelope.
That's good to know. We're living in troubled times, you see. Everyone's out to wrong old and frail people. They threaten to.
This one also hopped on the moral lecture bandwagon. I really do have a good deal of respect for old people. Before I ended up in Barleona, I often visited my old parents and would usually give up my seat to an older person in public transport. However, hearing moralistic lectures several times a day, especially from NPCs in a game, was too much.
Quest, deliver a letter, completed. Reward, 10 experience, points remaining until next level, 1,081 experience.
Dearie, can you help out a weak and helpless woman? I jotted down a note for Mabel here, but there's no one except for you to deliver it. Would you do a kindness for Granny?
The old lady's words, who was giving me the envelope with an innocent smile, nearly gave me a coughing fit. A cyclical quest. Well, I'll be. Count on me to get this lucky. I could spend the rest of the day running between the two old women, who would keep bashing me with lectures on morality and ethics and asking me to deliver the next letter. I almost decided to decline, but was hit with a crazy idea. And why not?
Can you tell me why you can't give her the letter yourself?
I told you, I'm too old and have no strength to walk over there. And if you deliver the letter, everything would be just swell.
She once again tried to give me the envelope. Then hang on tight, I warned the old lady, came up to her, took the letter, crouched, gripped her by the legs, and stood up.
Ah!
Patricia's voice had notes of panic in it. She gripped my hair with one hand and started vigorously waving the other one around.
What are you doing, you maniac? Dear me! Ah! Oh!
The old woman started to wail and fret. I confidently headed towards the flower-painted house, where Mabel lived. A cyclical delivery quest, you say? Well, well, we'll see just how advanced an imitator was installed in these old ladies when they find themselves sitting opposite each other. Will they keep trying to pass messages through me, or will they start speaking directly? They can give those moral lectures to each other, then. One thing worried me somewhat. The wailing exclamations of the old woman were loud enough for the whole town to hear, and could have got me in trouble with the guards.
My goodness, Patricia! You've got yourself some stallion there!
Exclaimed Mabel when we arrived at her doorstep. I put the now quiet old lady down and was surprised once again by how similar they looked. The developers really decided not to work too hard on a free cyclical quest, took one prototype and just changed the color of its clothes. Here you go. Please sign for a successful delivery, I said, smiling, seeing the befuddled faces of both grannies. Now you can talk enough to last you a whole week. I'll come by in the evening and carry Patricia back home.
Why are we standing on the doorstep? Fussed Mabel. If you've come for a visit, do come in for a cup of tea. You also come in. Since you've brought Patricia here, you can look after us for a bit.
Quest accepted. Serving old lady friends. Description, look after two lady friends who had just met up. Quest type, uncommon. Reward, 80 experience. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, 3 hours of community service.
What? Where the heck did those 3 hours of community service come from? You can go to hell with quests like that, I thought angrily, and got ready to leave, but then saw a group of guards who were casting interested glances in our direction. A chill went down my spine. Looks like they did come in response to the old woman's cries after all, but decided not to interfere and see first how it all ended. If I refused right now, I'd be immediately tied up and spend those 3 hours doing community service, washing walls, cleaning horses, or sweeping the square. What possessed me to carry this granny here? Of course, dear ladies, I will look after you, since I helped you meet up, I muttered, following the old ladies into the house. Mabel's house turned out to be very cozy and full of light. The white and seemingly weightless curtains were hung on the windows, and big pots with flowers stood on small tables. As the old lady passed one of them, she swiped one of the leaves with her finger, carefully looking at the result. She probably wipes dust, which doesn't exist in Barleona, off her flowers on a daily basis.
You go to the kitchen, dearie, and make us some tea. You'll find cookies and sugar in the cupboard. When you make it, bring it here, said the hostess, after settling down in a comfy armchair. We'll have a girl-to-girl chat while you're at it.
Tea is a good thing, of course, but I don't know how to make it. I never learned. I made a last-ditch attempt to get out of the quest.
Have to teach you everything these days. How will these youngsters survive without us, I wonder? It's like you can never retire, grumbled Patricia, and then waved me away. Go, and don't come back without the tea. And don't forget the cookies,
Mabel reminded me, as I examined the message that appeared before my eyes.
New rare cooking recipe learned. Aromatic black tea. Total recipes, 3.
I quickly opened my cookbook to have a look at what it was I just learned.
Aromatic black tea. Description. Excellent black tea from the leaves of the Highland tea tree, which give off an unforgettable aroma. Crafting stat bonus. Plus crafting to the maximum energy value. Whoever drinks this tea will feel extraordinary vitality. Duration, 12 hours. On use, restores 20% of hit points and mana. Minimum level, 10. Crafting requirements, minimum cooking level 5. Ingredients, simple water, leaves of the Highland tea tree. Instruments, cooking kit.
Great! I got a nice little bonus, practically free. Sure, I'll make the tea for the old ladies, and then see what the result of doing that with crafting could be. I spent some time preparing the tea, found a tray, and placed on it 2 cups full of hot tea, steaming with fragrant aroma. Now I had to find some cookies, which the grannies implacably demanded. Their ceaseless chatter could be heard even from behind a closed door. What a boisterous pair! I wondered how their tongues weren't hurting from talking all the time. After going through practically every cupboard, I was about to go to Mabel to ask for the exact coordinates of the cookies, but found them in one of the farthest shelves. They were hidden behind an almost full bottle, which was labeled cherry liqueur. I glanced around thievishly and poured some liquor into both cups of tea. They really shouldn't have shanghaied me. I don't remember wrongs, but I don't suffer from amnesia either. The liqueur shouldn't do them any harm, but just in case, I selected the cup and had a look at its properties. Better safe than sorry.
Aromatic black tea with liqueur, +4 to the maximum value of energy, +50 attractiveness to the maker, does not stack with similar effects. The drinker of such tea becomes slightly tipsy and feels an exceptional surge of energy. Duration, 12 hours. On use, restores 20% of hit points and mana. Minimum level, 10.
+50 to attractiveness? It sounds familiar, but I don't remember what it affects. I went to the guide to look it up.
Attractiveness, a character stat that has a value between 0 and 100, and which determines the attitude of NPCs towards the player. It is impossible to choose to level up in this stat. It can only be increased by temporary buffs, a change of clothes, communicating with NPCs or other available means. Unlike reputation, which affects the entire faction, attractiveness affects each NPC separately, including an NPC belonging to a faction with which you have a negative reputation. When attractiveness reaches 80 and above, NPCs of the opposite sex could offer the player a visit to the dating house. You can look up your current level of attractiveness of your character to an NPC in that NPC's properties. That's it! How could I forget? This is the thing for which players create beautiful-looking characters, dress in bright clothes, and wear jewelry. The higher the attractiveness, the higher the probability of being given unique quests. I took the tray and entered the room with endlessly chattering old ladies and smiled. When I looked up my level of attractiveness in Mabel's properties, it was a solid 3. It was a surprise that the old lady let me into her house at all, if she finds me so unpleasant. Without looking in my direction, and barely pausing from their talk, the old ladies quickly drank their tea, taking no notice of its temperature. I knew that I couldn't leave until I was dismissed, so I sat on the sofa and briefly closed my eyes. A 5-hour nap is a good thing, but it's no substitute for proper sleep. The old ladies started off on another lively discussion, and without noticing it, I fell asleep for the second time that day. I was woken up by a song. And it's no, nay, never, no, nay, never, no more. Will I play the wild rover? No, never, no more. Embracing each other, the old ladies swayed to the melody and diligently sang out the lyrics, looking at the world with tipsy eyes. Great, now they'll accuse me of making grannies into drunkards. At some point, the hazy gazes of Mabel and Patricia fell on me, and they stopped singing.
Just tell me, Mabel, how could a young man who makes such delicious tea end up in prison, eh? You don't say, Patricia. I'm at a loss with it myself. He seems to have it all, hands, feet, and a head. But he still ended up a murderous thug. All the youth is like this today. They want it all, quick and easy. I think that's because he doesn't have a proper woman behind him. If he had a wife, she'd stop him going down the slippery slope. Too true. I happen to have an unmarried lady neighbor. She'd put him on the straight and narrow. Even our blacksmith is afraid of her. She's scary, he says. What does he know of beauty in women? You don't say. Always walks past my house with thin, stick-like waves. There's hardly anything there to look at. And your neighbor's a different story. A pleasure to see how she can carry 3 sacks of flour on her shoulder.
At this point, I completely woke up and stared at the old ladies. What the heck is going on? Drunken NPCs are planning to marry me off? And to some female version of Hercules, too? Baffled, I looked from Patricia to Mabel and back. I'm really in it now. First I carried the old lady here, and then got them so drunk on liqueur that they intend to get me married. I was afraid to think of what would happen next.
But where would this pretty boy find the money for our sweet dove? He doesn't have a penny to his name. Just look at him. I reckon we need to help him. What do you think? Helping is good, but would he manage it? How many seekers have we already sent? None came back. The woodwolf did them all in, including my own sweetheart.
Mabel wiped a tear.
He'll make it. Just look at the wild glances he's giving us. It's like he was himself a Woodworth.
That's true, dearie.
Mabel turned to me now.
We decided to help you. You're kind and understanding. Arranged this meeting for us and all. A good lad. But that's not enough for you to win over our sweet lass. You need to prepare yourself. She has to see you as a handsome lad, and not some roving riff-raff. We know of a hidden treasure. A long time ago, a rich merchant, Swiftbell, buried it and put a Woodworth to guard it. If you can get the better of the Woodworth, the treasure will be yours, and you can ask our sweet lass for her hand in marriage. What do you say?
Quest accepted. Don't wake the Woodworth in its snooze. Description: deep in the forest, 10 kilometers to the south of the town, the location is marked on the map, there lives a Woodworth. Find it, and take Swiftbell's treasure that it is guarding. Quest type, rare. Reward, Swiftbell's treasure. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, none.
The quest description didn't say a word about marriage or a time limit, so I agreed to take it. Me? Passing up a rare treasure-finding quest? Not gonna happen.
That's very good, then. Now carry me home. I've been here for ages now,
said a pleased Patricia, and stretched her arms towards me. Quest: serving old friends completed. Reward: 80 experience. Points remaining until next level: 1001 experience.
I said goodbye to Mabel, and having carefully delivered Patricia home, who was now looking pleased and casting a masterful gaze at the surroundings, I was on my way to get the maps. The cartographer was a representative of a species common in Barleona, gnome, Greedybuggeritis vulgaris. For 2 gold he offered me to buy
the most exactest ever
map put together by a
daring and lucky
explorer. The snag of it was that I knew full well that good maps cost upwards of 200 gold, but fell for the cartographer's words like a little kid. After handing me the map and taking my money, the gnome did all he could to see me out, saying he was busy, that he needed to visit his grandmother, and generally had a headache. But I did manage to unfold and take a look at what I bought. Oh, boy. A map like this I could draw myself, even without the cartographer profession. It had arrows, some incomprehensible unlabeled signs, and drawings of supposedly interesting locations that took up half the map. With predictable trepidation, I turned the page and looked at the plan of the town. Whoever drew this map should be banned for life from ever repeating the feat. The streets were simple straight lines forming a grid, and here and there had labels like Bank, Main Square, and Tumpel. I looked at the gnome and was met by the gaze of big, honest eyes, radiating incomprehension.
"Is something wrong? I didn't have time to look at the map myself, but I was assured that it is the very best. Don't you agree?"
This greedy salesman asked this with such overplayed naivete that I gave up. After all, that's the way he's been scripted, to trick the players as much as possible, thereby getting the most money out of them. What was the point of getting angry? I left the gnome only 20 minutes later, after I acquired the full set of maps of the Malabar Empire and its main towns, including Farstead. I also trained in the cartographer profession, and was now able to correct the maps myself. It is a very useful skill that brings in a lot of money and levels up just through drawing pictures. All these goodies cost me 700 gold. I didn't even manage to level up in trade, because the gnome flatly refused to give me a discount. Never mind. The maps were worth it. I asked the nearest patrol for the exact location of Almas and headed over there to pay him a visit. Let's see what a former shaman trainer looks like.
The door of Almus's house was opened by a plump maid whose snow-white lace apron made a contrast to her dark skin. After giving me an appraising look, as if examining the contents of my personal bag and the amount of money in my possession, she deigned to utter,
"Come in. Mr. Almus has been expecting you since the morning."
I was expected? Or was Almus expecting someone else, and the maid simply mistook me for the intended guest? In any case, I won't leave here until I've found out everything about my former boss. I sat in a comfortable armchair and began to examine the room when an old man dressed in a plush dressing gown and bunny-eared slippers joined me in the armchair opposite. I seemed to be running into a lot of old folks today. Judging by his sure movements and lack of glasses or a walking stick, the old man was hardly older than 70. I saw that he even had all his teeth, when Almus—I was sure that I was in the presence of none other than the former shaman trainer—gave me a wide smile. I stood up and bowed to the former trainer. It's nothing to me, and he might like it.
"My greetings to you too, younger brother. Have a seat. I've gotten used to everyone sitting in my presence now."
Almus paused for a minute, looking me over head to foot, and then continued,
"You're quite a sight, to say the least. It's been a while since we had a shaman show up around here, who had every chance of becoming a harbinger. According to Prontho, it is Cornick that you need, as he's the only one that can cut a diamond like this and get the main principles of shamanism into that thick head. And with the recommendation that was given to you by the Supreme Spirit of Air, you simply must be something else, even without training. By the way, I was warned that you would visit me today, but I'll admit that I expected to see you much earlier. Did the story of Swiftbell's treasures capture your imagination so much as to get you so delayed?"
"So you know about Swiftbell?" I asked in surprise, staring at Almus's shining smile. He's looking at me like I was a little child, I swear.
"Of course. But you needn't worry yourself on that account. Running around the forest looking for some treasure is of little interest at my age. When you get your hands on it, drop by and tell me how you managed to get the better of the Woodwolf."
"And who is Prontho?" I asked the name of the unknown being that gave me the recommendation. I didn't think I had the time to get to know anyone well enough for them to give me such a detailed description.
"You know him. He is a high shaman. The orc, who is currently the head of the Pryke Mine, my former teacher."
"But why was he stripped of the ability to teach? Why was he sent to the mine? Who is Cornick? Why is it him that I have to go to for training?" I fired my questions at him one after the other. While Almus seemed to be in a mood to give answers, I had to make the best of it.
"Is this all that you wanted to find out today?"
Almus raised an eyebrow in question.
"Or did you have a couple more questions? Don't hurry. Have a think. What if you missed something? If so, write it all down on a piece of paper, then read it over a few times to check in case you forgot something. And as soon as you've done that, you can proceed to tear up the paper and throw it away. You are a shaman, and not some chattering fishwife, to behave in such a stupid manner."
At the end, Almas even stood up a little and raised his voice, and it dawned on me that he was being sarcastic rather than telling me what to do.
"The Supreme Spirit brought news that your totem is a dragon," said Almas, now in a calm voice, as he leaned back in his armchair. "I propose an exchange. I answer any three of your questions, and you show me your dragon. Dragons are such interesting creatures."
"I don't know how to show my totem. I'm just an initiate, shaman. I have to get a trainer to learn how to summon my totem." I tried to get out of showing Draco. There's no reason to show him to just anyone, but Almas abruptly interrupted me.
"A trainer will not be teaching you to work with the totem. He will tell you where to look for its physical incarnation. You would have to learn how to communicate with the totem yourself."
"So how do I summon him?" I uttered in bewilderment, more for myself than for Almas, and then one bright thought entered my head. Why am I so slow? I just have to look in the manual and the forum, where everything is written out just for such dimwits like myself. I was about to enter totem into the search when Almas said,
"Choose a place where you would like to see your totem, and then call him in your thoughts. To put him away, ask the totem to disappear. Do it."
Choose a place and call him? Seems simple enough. I looked at the small empty table that stood between the two armchairs and thought it was a good place for Draco. I then closed my eyes, brought the image of the totem before me, and said, "Hi, come to me. Let's play for a bit." For a couple of seconds, nothing happened, and I was about to repeat my call when a projection of a playfully swirling little dragon appeared above the table.
"To play? I want to play. Where's Bali?"
I heard a child's voice, which seemed to come from everywhere. Judging by Almas's enthusiastic, though not surprised, expression, he either didn't hear anything, or the fact that totems could speak was nothing unusual to him.
"Will there be pieces today? I wiped them last time."
"How sweet,"
Almas whispered in amazement, stood up from his chair and started to pace by the table, watching Draco. Then he turned to me and said,
"I'm taking him. You'll still never manage to incarnate him. No one has seen dragons for hundreds of years. Come to me, my little one."
Almas stretched his hand towards the projection, clearly intending to take Draco away. Such impudence left me dumbstruck for a few seconds, but I quickly came to myself and jumped up to scream about the violation of my rights. I wouldn't just let someone take my dragon. Suddenly the room was filled with a terrible roar of the dragon, which drowned out all the other sounds. I was landed with a bunch of debuffs with the sign, "Not applicable to the owner," "Stun," "Daze," "Petrify," and so on. The duration of the debuffs varied from a few seconds to a couple of minutes, but this wasn't the main thing. The main thing was that a stream of fire spouted from the dragon into Almas, and the former shaman trainer ceased to exist in Barleona. Only a pile of ash remained in his place, which was dejectedly lying there on the scorched floor. The little dragon started to chirp indignantly, circling around and casting angry glances in every direction, while the stunned maid stood there agape, too scared to even breathe. "Listen, run away quick. I will call you later and we'll play then," I asked Draco in my thoughts, helplessly closing my eyes not to see the black blotch on the floor. Barleona is a truly horrible game. I had already felt real panic, pain, and pleasure. Now came the time to find out what is felt by people when all their hopes and plans are destroyed. Just now, with the help of my totem, I destroyed an NPC, thus violating the main condition of my parole. Any minute now the guards would appear, and I will go back to the mines for the remainder of my prison term. My head began to swim, my feet gave way, and I fell into the armchair.
"Murder!"
As if reading my thoughts, the buxom maid gave out a wild scream as soon as Draco disappeared.
"Master's been killed! Guards, grab the killer!"
The guards that popped out of nowhere quickly surrounded me, their halberds pointed at me from every direction. The head of the guards waved his hand, and on the projection that appeared everyone saw how Almas stretched his hand towards the projection of the little dragon. I shouted in indignation, jumped up as if giving an attack command. The dragon opened his mouth, and the wave of fire left a big soot mark where Almas just stood.
"Mayen, you are accused of the murder of Almas, the former shaman trainer, with a dragon as the murder weapon. You have the right."
I closed my eyes and hung my head as I listened to the guard. The clan, the chess pieces, the herald's quest, the emperor, Prontho, Swiftbell's treasure. It all now looked so unreal and impossible that a lump had appeared in my throat. Why, oh why, did he try to get his hands on Draco?
"Good day, gentlemen. What are you doing in my home?"
The sound of the voice made me open my eyes and stare dumbfounded at an open door to the next room. Almas, alive and well, was looking questioningly at the guards. If Almas, in that silly dressing gown and slippers, had made you smile, Almas the High Shaman, as he stood at the door, commanded respect. He had a shaman's hat with branching stag horns that were almost grazing the door frame, a large cape billowing behind him as if in the wind, and a staff with a curved, loop-like top, inside which swirled a blue-gray cloud, illumined by silent flashes of lightning. On Almas's shoulder perched an amber-eyed hawk, which periodically filled the room with a piercing cry, which put a 2-second paralyzing debuff on those present. An embodied totem. And Almas himself was clearly a high shaman in full battle gear. To be honest, he looked terrifying enough to make a shiver run down your neck. So when the guards lowered their halberds as they stared at Almas, I unconsciously backed off, was tripped by the armchair, fell, and realizing that it was too late to run, tried to dissolve in the damned piece of furniture to avoid becoming an accidental target for any smiting.
"We are apprehending the criminal that killed you."
Taking no notice of Almas's appearance, reported the guard, totally unperturbed by the absurdity of his statement.
"Ah, that's it, is it? I agree, criminals must be apprehended. But I do not see any in this room. Can you remind me once again, what is this young man accused of?" "Your murder!"
I was starting to like this commander of the guards. He stuck to his guns, despite the fact that even his subordinates had started to glance at each other in incomprehension. Good on him. I'm also rather curious as to whom the little dragon burned, if Almas was alive. Everyone saw the projection.
"My murder?"
Almas ostentatiously raised his eyebrows.
"Mary?"
He looked at the maid, who stared at him with huge, frightened eyes, and kept trying to back off, despite her back already being against the wall. When she heard herself being addressed, she gave a high-pitched exclamation, started shuffling her feet even more, sliding against the floor and trying to push through the wall with all her weight.
"Please, make some tea for me and for my guest. And calm down, I'm not a ghost. As for you, gentlemen,"
Almas turned towards the guards,
"allow me to lay any doubts to rest. I am alive and well, and have no intention of dying or allowing myself to be killed."
After that he entered the room, which was immediately filled with freshness and the smell of thunder. Almas looked at the black spot that was left after him, shook his head reproachfully, and mumbled something like,
"Catherine will eat me alive,"
and then went on,
"I have not lived for 200 years to be incinerated by some projection. Mary, the tea!"
Almas raised his voice when he saw that the maid was still trying to break through the wall with her body. The guards weren't giving up, so Almas had to allow himself to be touched to prove that he wasn't a ghost. When they left the house, Almas sat back in the armchair as if nothing had happened and scratched his nose, as if trying to decide on how to start the conversation. He was about to say something when the maid came in and, casting strange glances at the high shaman, put the tray on the table, and then immediately ran back a few paces. It seemed she was having a terrible day. First, me with my dragon, and then Almas, who died and then revived like a phoenix. Later, she will probably go and buy many strong drinks and try to forget this day like a bad dream.
"Mary," Almas said to the maid, again making her jump, "everything is all right. No need to be so distressed. If you have doubts that I'm alive, you can also come up and give me a poke. I promise."
Almas had no chance to say what he promised, as the maid flew up to him and started to poke him in his shoulder and chest with her fingers. She finally gave a clear sigh of relief and said,
"Mr. Almas, you're alive? I was so afraid that you were... well..."
She was lost for words for a short while, looking at Almas and at me in turn, and then suddenly turned towards me and started to wail.
"What on earth is going on? He came with the dragon, scared me half to death, ruined the carpet, will probably make the cups all filthy too, and then..."
"Mary, I think you still have a lot of things to do in the kitchen,"
Almas said gently, but categorically, which made Mary fall silent, throw me an angry glance, and leave the room.
"Take no notice,"
Almas explained, when he saw me gaze in surprise at the departing maid.
"Mary has temporarily replaced my housekeeper, Catherine, who went into the town today and left in her place this walking incongruity. And although this isn't Mary's first time working here, she still hasn't gotten used to certain peculiarities."
After making a brief pause to pour both of us some tea, Almas started to drink it with a visible pleasure that was almost contagious. I was full of questions, but if the host decided that now was the time for a tea ceremony, interrupting him would be very rude. I took up my cup and followed Almas's example. It was ordinary tea, which very slightly restored some hit points and mana, adding no buffs or debuffs. I was even disappointed. Ordinary old ladies had a much more delicious and useful tea than a high shaman. We spent 5 minutes in tranquil silence. I tried to appreciate the tea, but failed miserably. The vast majority of players log into Barleona with their sensory filters turned on, so many objects lacked any taste because it was unnecessary. I had a feeling that the High Shaman's tea was a striking example of this rule. It had no taste, color, or smell. Finally, Almas put his cup down and looked at me.
"Patience is Shaman's main strength. Without it, commanding the spirits is impossible. They are all like little children, capricious, willful, and restless. If a shaman is impulsive, he will achieve nothing. Let me provide you a brief explanation of what happened today. First, I found out about Swiftbell's treasure fairly easily. You were being watched by the spirits that I sent from the moment you left the mayor. As soon as a shaman appeared in Farstead, even if it was a foolish and an inexperienced one, I was immediately told of this. I became interested in watching you. Who you were, what would you do, and how you would show yourself. By the way, if it's not too much trouble, after our talk I will ask you to make the tea the honorable ladies taught you to make. What we were drinking just now could only be called tea at a very long stretch. Second, Prontho said that you possess a unique totem, a dragon, so I had to check whether your link with him was a strong one. Our world has many, let me put it this way, not very nice shamans, who could be very capable of performing an alienation of your totem if it does not suit your spirit. This is why I created a projection of my spirit and sent it to chat with you. The projection turned out to be rather crude. I only noticed its appearance after I sent it out to you. Bunny-eared slippers! So embarrassing! But the spirit did his job. If it was possible to alienate the dragon, you would have lost him. I think it would have been better to experience disappointment now than when the dragon grew and you got used to him. But it was fine in the end, so accept my sincere admiration for such a beautiful totem. I know that you have very many questions, but I will answer only three. Think about them carefully before asking.
Why was Prontho sent to Pryke? I fired off right away. That was essentially the reason why I came to Almas.
He did not obey the will of the Shaman Council. Next question, replied Almas, unperturbed.
Oops, a fail. When will I learn to think and listen? I have to stop being so impulsive. It got me into enough trouble already. So how do I ask in a correct way? I started to ask questions of myself and reply to them in Almas's manner. I really do have to think before asking. So, what did Prontho break? Rules. Which rules did Prontho break? Those imposed by the Shaman Council. Why did the Shaman Council decide that Prontho broke the rules? Well, it's not a bad question, is it? I was about to ask it when the answer struck me, because the majority of the council members voted for it. I'm getting nowhere with this. Almas sat there with a smile, enjoying my attempts to arrange the information that I had and force my brains to work. Does it really look that amusing from outside? Think, Head, think, and I'll get you a cap, like the one on Almas, horns and all. Mages think. My memory brought up the words,